This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 8:46 and you're with Julian and Joyce, and we're going to talk about the business headlines today. And splashed on the front page of the Edge Financial Daily, very dramatically, Thabong Haji's new boss saying, "We are not fund managers," as Thabong Haji announced plans to trim its equity exposure to just 30 to 40% from about 50% before.
Yeah, so this is according to Thabong Haji Group MD and CEO Dato Sri Zukri Samad. He said that their role is to administer the Hajj, so the focus of their investments should change. And he wants Thabong Haji to focus on fixed income rather than equities. I think with about 65 billion ringgit in assets, the fund's equity market exposure has fallen from 55% of its assets to 50% in 2017.
So they did that SPV recently to just put them in a legal position to pay out dividends, right? Because before this, they were technically violating the statute by having more liabilities than assets. Mm. It should be the other way around when you want to pay out dividends or hibah. And right now, Zukri said that they can resume legally paying hibah. So I'm going to ask the question, right, Joyce? Thabong, they manage between 60 to 70 billion ringgit for people who want to perform the Hajj, for Muslims who want to perform the Hajj. So the question is, are they fund managers? To me, they are, right? It's quite straightforward.
Well, I guess in this case, what he's saying is that they don't want to invest so much in equities. What they want to do is go into more fixed income because they view that as a more steady kind of flow of income for them. So at the end of the day, I guess, it's their risk appetite. What he's saying is that currently at 50%, this is for 2017, when that's the equity market exposure that the fund had. Zukri saying that he still thinks the ratio remains too high.
Okay, so the question now then becomes whether one person represents the risk preference or risk appetite of millions and millions of depositors who are saving for the Hajj. And the risk preference is not objective. It's actually quite subjective.
Yes, it is.
And I gather from speaking to my to our Muslim colleagues that actually the wait list is quite long, but you get an advantage of saving with Thabong Haji because Thabong Haji gets the bulk of the quotas going into Hajj, with some travel agents getting the rest of it. So if you have a very long time frame, and if you under the benefits of Thabong Haji can decide what you want to do with your money, would you be conservative or would you try to take more risk because you have such a long time to save? Because higher risk, higher returns, right? If you have a longer time frame, you might achieve your goal of saving for that trip much faster.
True, but Julian, as you mentioned, it is subjective, and it looks like the new management for Thabong Haji, this is the direction that they'll be taking. But, you know, it's still subject to board approval. Although if it's approved, then that will mark a sharp realignment of Thabong Haji's asset allocation strategy, which I think had become quite equity heavy in the past few years. So it looks like they want to shift this direction. Perhaps this is a reflection of the risk appetite of the current management. So we have to see whether or not the board approves it.
Okay, the other company that's possibly shifting direction is Proton, because they're exploring new exports market, especially in Pakistan and the Middle East. Proton CEO Dr. Lee Chun Rong said that they will be going into, they will try to make Middle Eastern markets to be on par with the ASEAN region.
Yeah, I think this is a strategy to strengthen their global presence. And this year, Proton targets to export 3,000 cars to foreign countries.
So we have Proton CEO Dr. Lee Chun Rong here commenting on such targets.
2017, our export is at 248. Last year, our export is 1,388 units. So this year, we want to export more. For example, 3,000. If government can support me, I can export more. For example, 4,000 or 5,000. We want to focus as a market, but we don't want to forget the other market. We will try our best go to the other market.
And that was Proton CEO Dr. Lee Chun Rong commenting on the Proton's export targets. And I know that the growth is very exponential, growing from almost nothing in terms of exports to a target of about 3,000. Mm-hmm. But 3,000 cars is still it's still very small in the ocean of the car market around the world and around the region. Don't forget that Proton's local market, about 70,000 cars sales a year, and you know, the likes of the car giants that export around the world, they have got a production of millions and millions of cars, right? So does this really change or push the needle in terms of Proton's strategy and earnings?
Well, Julian, maybe it's a strategy to test the markets first to see whether or not they like Proton cars. But I must say, looking at their track record, they are making some headway. I mean, last year, Proton exported 1,388 cars, mainly to ASEAN, compared to 248 cars in 2017. So there's an improvement. Maybe it's just test out the market
very small,
first, see whether
very
there's...
Small. Yeah, growth see is the, big, but the absolute number is small.
But then maybe it's just to test out the market first, see whether or not there's demand for Proton cars in these new markets.
Yeah. I think usually if you are a very competitive global player in any product, you actually don't have time to test, right? Because testing may be very costly. And you got to make a decision on strategy, and time is on the essence. However, there is some hope pinned on the Proton X70, which is the first ever SUV, and the response have been quite positive.
Yeah,
here.
And looking at the new markets that Proton wants to export into that includes Egypt and Jordan as well. So these are the new markets they're looking at.
Okay, the other main headlines is that Dr. Jomo Kwame Sundram, who's an economics professor, has come out, and also one of the members of the Council of Eminent Persons.
Who takes the public transportation.
Does he? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was an article that came out with a photo of him reading the newspaper in the LRT or MRT.
I admire him even more now. And he also says that regulating digital currencies is not going to be an easy feat because valuations are highly dependent on perceptions of financial assets. Right now, the public has only a very superficial understanding of such digital currencies.
Yeah, he's saying that, you know, it's not transparency that should be the crux of the understanding of Bitcoin, but confidence. Because if our confidence in it goes up, the price goes up, and that is what Bitcoin relies on. And, you know, there are no fundamentals involved. That's what he's saying.
Okay, but I mean, that goes with a lot of financial products, right? People just trade in it. Some understand the fundamentals, some don't. What are the fundamentals of a piece of paper that's called the US dollar or the ringgit or gold, right? You can't eat gold. You can't put it into your car for fuel. But there is a market for gold. And even with bitcoins, where the prices have fallen a lot, right? So for every seller, there's a buyer, right? Who's that guy who's buying cryptos as the price is falling, right, to 3,000 or 5,000 or whatever?
Well, I can understand that there should, for me, like, I'm with the camp that there should be some regulation, you know, because at the end of the day, I don't think many people understand what is a digital asset yet. And I think it's good to have that regulation to protect investors.
Investor protection.
And all that, yeah, and also to look into the area of anti-money laundering. You know, it's very real. And I think there should be some regulation there to prevent, you know, money laundering.
I understand that point. But going back to the professor, the good professor's point, right, about fundamentals and all that, that's a little bit more nuanced and subtle. And meanwhile, Joyce, you know, one person who has also come out to comment about the ICO ruling is Country Heights' boss, they were going to issue their own horse currency.
Yeah, this Tan Sri Lee Kim Yew, right? Yeah, he's the company's founder and executive chairman. Yeah, they wanted to issue horse currency. This was announced a couple of months ago, and he came out with a comment on the regulation. He had called for the regulators to ensure that the new law will not be lopsided and merely oriented to financial services.
I think there is some point there. When you regulate a financial product, are you sort of tipping the advantage to financial institutions in the sense that, you know, the gatekeepers, these are the gatekeepers, right? Now you got to bank with the banks, and therefore the banks have a one up over the users of cryptocurrencies, ICOs, and blockchain technology and all that, right? But blockchain and cryptos are supposed to be autonomous, independent, almost anarchic, right? Where you're supposed to have this independence and anonymity behind it.
But it's because of that I find it scary,
the regulation,
right?
Well, you might find it scary, yeah. But there's a whole bunch of people that actually understand it, right? So this is how market works. There are, Tabung Haji has just found out, there are conservative products and there are equities, right? So some assets are scarier for some and not so scary to others,
but
right?
In this day that we live in, I mean, money laundering and it's very real. And you need to know your customer. I think that is a reason why there are KYCs in place, KYC rules and regulations. And I mean, but this framework, I think it's not out yet, right? It's just announced, but it's going to be launched only by end March.
Yeah, people are going to be looking for details, especially mm-hmm. those who are involved in cryptocurrency services. Now, the other big news, Joyce, is coming from the Malaysian Reserve. At the World Bank Group's conference yesterday, globalization was the theme of the day. And Bank Negara Malaysia stated that the rapid technological advancement and globalization has now become an increasingly polarizing force.
Yeah, so what you're saying is that we should re-examine policy choices and recalibrate the way forward. I guess, in a way, yes, we have to relook at where we are in terms of policy and regulation and all that and be more current, right? That's what you're saying.
Assistant Governor Marzun Nisham Omar, in his welcoming remarks to the conference, said that there is a growing sense of discontent and injustice towards the globalization trend in recent years. He said that the globalization is a double-edged sword. Mm. And I'm just wondering whether this is suggesting that perhaps the government should come up with policy, very equalizing policies such as the universal basic income.
Yeah, I think he also points out that, the risk in financial openness to other emerging markets is real, and that needs more needs to be done when it comes to safer capital flows. Again, it's all about being safe, knowing your customer and things like that.
I guess it also doesn't help with characters such as Donald Trump, who is and really polarizing the world right now. So that's something to look out for as well. All right. The 9 o'clock news is coming up. And when we come back, we will give you updates from Bursa Malaysia. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.